Five, four, three, two.
And it's time to tell the damn story. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that celebrates the trials and tribulations, the fears and hopes that is the journey of storytelling. And we discuss every aspect of that and the times we have failed and the times we have succeeded in hopes of making your journey smoother and more fruitful. And who better to guide you through that than the legend himself, the creator of Aaron Blackjack Day, 1930s African-American soldier of fortune. Great character that he writes when he's not writing Scooby-Dooby or the Bat Guy or Archie or so many other characters. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one, the only, Alex Simmons.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
You're welcome, Alex.
Let's see if I can get that to happen again. Thank you. Yeah, there we go. Look at that. I just love that.
Celebration.
Let's hear it for Apple and the little tricks that Zoom and Apple have managed to work out there. No idea how this works, but there it is. Thank you, Chris, and welcome, everybody. Glad to be here again for episode 299 of Tell the Damn Story with my best friend, Mr. Christopher Ryan, author extraordinaire.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, does talk a lot about me, which I do appreciate, but I must say.
Because somebody has to.
That's right, because nobody else is. But this guy here, who is not only an author par excellence of fiction, as well as socially stimulating conversation, and a book about, let's just say that the political platforms that we've been experiencing in the past few years, he did a wonderful novel about that, and you should get it. You should get it. It's a Simple Rebellion. That's something he doesn't talk about very often, but I will wave the flag, literally and figuratively, for that particular book. Also, Genius High, also a detective series, which, again, he's changed the title on several times. So what is it, Chris?
It was forthcoming, and the series will be Mallory and Gunner, and each one will have a subtitle. So Mallory and Gunner. Yeah. That series will be relaunched late in February or early March.
And he's also got out a 5, soon to be 6 book series called
Soul Scream Anthologine.
Which is a combination of an anthology series in a magazine format of horror tales by a number of gifted authors, different authors, some of whom have been on this show for interviews. So that's fantastic. And recently, this man has also, as the publisher editor, released a wonderful how-to write horror book called Creep This Way.
Actually, I published it. Rebecca Cuthbert.
Creep This Way.
Wrote
he didn't write it, but he did publish it. He edited it and published it. And it's by whom?
Rebecca Cuthbert. And
That's right. Say that again.
Rebecca Cuthbert.
Who will be here next week.
That's right.
That's something
and
else.
And one of the unique thing about Creep This Way is there is some bit about how to write this and how to write that. But it's really the gem of it is that it's about the everything else of being an author.
There you go.
It's just chock full of really approachable, useful, applicable information told in Rebecca's wonderful voice. So go out and check it out. Creep This Way, How to Become a Horror Writer. But it applies to anything. You can become a romance writer after reading that. It doesn't make a difference. It don't make no difference.
You can write romantically creepy stories.
So now I have two things to say.
All of this is leading up to the fact, two things. One, that next episode, 300, next week, 300 episodes of Tell the Damn Story. The 300th episode will be next week, which will be a roundtable discussion. That means we're going to have a number of authors of different genres and backgrounds and interests here talking about the process, the creative aspects of it, the challenges they face, and also here to answer your questions.
That's right. You're gonna give the audience a chance to write in some questions this week. And I got to tell you, if I'm honest, I'm a little paranoid today.
Oh, okay. What are you paranoid
I
about,
know.
Chris?
It's episode 299, and I gotta tell you, part of me is distracted. I'm really listening to hear the door get knocked down because I think the feds have got to come and stop this. Yeah, they're kind of busy these days, but you know.
We've snuck through this far, this long. We'll be fine. But so
And
again,
if they're
next week,
watching, if
and
people are watching on YouTube, yes, I am in one of those old Batman lairs, which is why we're angled this way. That is nuts. Let's see if I can fix it a little bit. I don't
okay.
know.
Oh, there you are. He's back in
Sure,
focus.
that works much better. So what are
Now,
we talking about
well,
besides
see,
it
now
being
I was going to get to that. I was
299?
going to get to that. I was going to
What are
get to
we
that.
talking
I was
about?
gonna get, okay, so here we go. In order for us to better prepare, you guys for next week, which by the way, will be live. That's right. It's going to be
Is
live.
it? Yeah.
Maybe some of you won't be on when we're live and you'll have to listen to the replay, but we will next Sunday be broadcasting live at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hey,
That gives
mercy.
you another opportunity. There'll be more information about that posted throughout the week.
Oh.
But in order to better prepare you for that, one of
Wow.
the things that Chris and I often do is we take a look back at the things that we've talked about, the questions that have come in, the various statements and experiences that other authors who've been on our show have shared with us. And we say, what is a bigger question, or what is a smaller question, or what is a question that hasn't been asked that much? And also, how is that affecting us? And I, Chris, poor guy, Chris said to me the other day, so Alex, what are we going to talk about on episode 299? And I decided, oh, he never should have asked me that. Because I do have a question, actually. I have a question, and I put it to you this way. For us writers, emerging and those who've been in the profession for a long time, who actually decides the narrative, right? Do we writers truly get to choose what we write about and what we say? Or are we basically influenced by society and merely, as Chris will retaliate on, are we merely the ventriloquist dummies? In other words, what society is telling us to is important, is relevant, is what they want to hear, is what they want to see. Are we simply just puking that up for them? Are we really visionaries, and are we really looking at life and reflecting it back and trying to stimulate and educate and help people see things? So that's what we're going to explore today. Who gets to set the narrative? What has it been in the past? Where we think it is now? And we may not answer the question. I'm not going to say, for speaking for myself and not for Chris, I'm not going to say that I have the answer. I'm going to say I have opinions or views or thoughts about it. But this is the question: are we really being influenced into what we churn out? Or are some of us or all of us actually looking ahead, getting these things, these inspirations, these muses, and are trying to put out the best stories to stimulate the masses and get them to see things more clearly, differently, or even more lightheartedly? So that's where we're going to start. That's the question.
In case you got lost there, ladies and gentlemen, what Alex is announcing is we're going to do a grad class in this one period. That's what we're going to do. There's no simple question. It's going to be this big, deep thing. And yes, I will take exception to describing writers or creators as ventriloquist dummies. At worst case scenario, we would be the ventriloquist, and the book would be the thing we speak through. I don't want to call it a dummy. I think that it's interesting. Some people say that our creatives are creative because they're broken and they're trying to heal themselves or fix themselves. And I think that's too negative of a take on the creative process. I think creatives are creatives because they feel in a way that a lot of other people have swallowed or have tamped down. Don't be emotional. Don't be emotional. But creatives are, that's where they start. Oh my God. Somebody has to do something. You know what? I'm going to do something. I got to say something about this. How am I going to say it? And Simple Rebellion was written because look, the craziness of the last, I'd say, 10 years. And this is the second time I've written it because I put it out the first version and reality surpassed the over-the-top insanity of A Simple Rebellion version one. It went further. And then my ending kind of came true, but in a nightmare fashion with January 6th. So I had to rewrite and make sure I clarified. I think that's what people do all the time, whether it's Stephen King or whether it's whoever, right? It doesn't make a difference. The top 10 bestsellers or the cult favorites, they all go to story. Or go to movie making because there's something that won't let them stop.
I think you're right there, because again, one of the points that got me thinking about this more heavily recently was that, again, if I look at, Chris likes to say that I have the Wayback Machine or the Time Machine or whatever it is.
The Alex Sibbins Time Machine.
Because I've been here since
sled, like Santa's sled. That's how I see it.
I've been here since the forming of the first rock. I look back at what kind of material is being put out at different decades, different eras, and what was happening at that time socially in the world. And when you look at the 1950s, okay, we just come out of World War II, we'd had the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and radiation, that phrase, that word, was now becoming a part of more Joe and Jane average conversation. Prior to that, 30s, 40s, okay, ray guns and things were all fantasy. But now we had that kind of power. And by the 60s, we had lasers and we had space travel. 1957, Sputnik went up in the air. By 1969, the United States was in space. So these things became reality. And so what was written and fantasized, even Jules Verne, the submarine, all these things that were fantasy or science fiction fantasy were now realities. And so you were starting to see more movies about that. Mothra and Godzilla and The Beast from Beneath the Sea and all those films from the 50s coming forward into the 60s, a lot of them were about radiation having an effect on having an effect on living beings and subsequently creating monsters or outer space invasions.
Let me offer a brother take on that, a next door neighbor, right? Aligned with
my brother.
We started from the aftermath of World War II. But if you look at that generation, its parents went through World War I and then the Great Depression. A lot of the people who fought in World War II were children in the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So they didn't know safety. And then the world was at risk with World War II. And then they come back. The end of World War II is not one, but two atomic bombs. We blew up entire cities. Want to know what that was like, ladies and gentlemen? Go check out that.
There you go.
It's interesting how it comes around again. Mm-hmm. But by the late 40s into the 50s, they just wanted quiet and peace, and they found they couldn't get it because they weren't sure about where this atomic weaponry was going to lead us. And then the imagination ran wild. What price were we going to pay for this? Mm-hmm. That's where we got the big giant insect movies, them and it and all that, right? Yep. And aliens from space were going to see this or whatever. All that stuff started coming, and what it really was is that we felt a lack of control. And the other side of it was, you know, we had learned as a power that having a black hat to point our ire at was very useful for keeping everybody in line and going the direction we wanted. So when we got rid of the Nazis and all that sort of stuff, we just needed another one.
Yeah, we need a new bad guy.
And the Russians say, we're not giving such and such territories back. Oh, they are trying to take over the world. And it became that in the 60s, we started fighting wars where we were told we were doing the heroic thing. And then with Vietnam, we found out we were just doing it for profit.
But let's also,
America lost its mind on that.
Let's look at also what happened since you brought us into the 60s. The 60s not only brought us, no, the wars, you said Nam and Korea. Korea was the 50s, but then 60s was Vietnam. It was also the burgeoning of a new kind of hero in the creation of James Bond. James Bond books had been out for a while, but his first film, I think, was 1963. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and again, this goes back to what are we writing? What are we creating based on whatever our social influences are? Up until that point, your hero never did anything that was quote unquote unethical or didn't appear to be unethical.
Right.
So if your hero was going to shoot to kill somebody, it was because that person was shooting and trying to kill them. And yet in this scene of Dr. No from James Bond, I remember sitting in the movie theater digging this new spy film thing, and I'm really into it. And he has this culprit, this guy who is going to try and kill him. He now has a gun on him. The guy is unarmed. He can't do any harm to Bond. Bond gets him to give him the information he wants, and the guy's sort of snickering at Bond, and Bond just shoots him dead. And I'm sitting in the theater going, whoa, wait a minute. Now, even now, I still remember what that was like, because Bond was the hero, and he had just shot and killed an unarmed man. I remember trying to wrap my head around that at that time, but that was a new wave of hero. Right. That was the beginning of a new wave of hero.
We had gone from World War II movies, where everyone was fighting the bad guy together, to this kind of, we couldn't put our finger on who the bad guy was, between radiation and atomic questions and all that, and the Russians. The red threat. And remember, in the 50s, some congressman turned around and said, the red threat is you right over there. Oh, and you. Anyone we disagree with was you. So this paranoia came and we had a loss of control. James Bond, never out of control. Right. Even when the bad guy had him, do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Bond was still cool. He would still have the answer. He still had hope.
Yep.
And then comic books made a comeback, right, in the early 60s. Again, colorful, hopeful. But then Marvel started coming in, and this blend of radiation and heroics came in. And a lot of the Marvel characters are monsters. And it's a whole different look at who the heroes can be.
Well, let's
we understand where that came from, because they wrote war comics and they wrote monster comics and they wrote romance comics and they just mixed them together for Marvel. But still, it touched a zeitgeist. It touched something that the public was looking for. And same thing with James Bond, same thing with a lot of the power movies there. I will shut up now.
It's not about shutting up. I wanted to piggyback off of that because you mentioned the Marvel Comics. And again, you're mentioning radiation. And so, yeah, the Fantastic Four got their powers from radiation. Spider-Man got his powers from radiation. The Hulk got his power from radiation. Matter of fact, he was testing a bomb and he got radiated. That's so, right. I mean, you don't have to go out into space to get it. You don't have to get bitten by a spider that's been experimenting on it. Just go be in the wrong place when they set off a bomb. Right. But
or be the children of the atomic age and become X-Men.
And that's where I was going next with the X-Men, because the X-Men, this is mutation, not necessarily having to do with radiation, but the X-Men served two purposes. One, yes, you had these extraordinary characters, these mutants, you could talk about DNA and chromosomes and all that kind of stuff. But the other thing that the X-Men came to represent over the sequential decades was the other, those who were not accepted by society, the them. And those who are fighting for civil rights or gender rights or life choices rights, they could identify with the X-Men. And so the 60s, you had the civil rights movement, you had the social rights movement happening at that time. And it was reflected in your comics. It was reflected in your movies. It was reflected in your novels. And it's really interesting because you had movies like you had Psycho, which, okay, that's pretty much just a bizarre killer kind of scenario. But you also had Exodus, which is about the Jews and them having to find a home and the whole story of where they wound up and how they were being turned away from different countries. They're on ships and they can't disembark. And it's just suddenly we're looking at people who are disenfranchised, people who are marginalized. And yes, Black people also, and I say also because up until the 60s, you would get a Black person in a show. You would get a Black person in a story. You might get a movie. Oh, God. Daughters in the Dust came later, but Intruders in the Dust, which is another film which came before the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, but had a similar plot line. You might get an isolated storyline, but now in the 60s, because of the Civil Rights Movement, you're seeing more about Black people. You're starting to see more Hispanics. You're starting to see even Chinese or Asians being dealt with slightly differently in storylines rather than the stereotypical, or as I like to point out, the remarkable scenario of having Asians constantly played your lead characters being played by white people in makeup. So the 60s was giving us this sort of revolutionary experience of people who had been considered others or outside the norm or outside the spotlight, suddenly now making their way into center stage. And that was, again, in books, in films, and on the stage, on Broadway and that sort of thing. And again, some of the material that was being written in that time period was being written because people felt strong enough, brave enough, felt this was the right time to voice what they saw, what they felt, what might have been held back for all this time, or from the stories that had been passed on to them from their relatives. Now was the time to get it out there in the masses and to say something. And to some degree, it rattled the regular chain. And so I would say certainly in the 60s, one could look at it and say, yeah, creatives definitely found their voices and were shouting from the rooftops at that particular time.
Yes.
Now, I also, you know, don't want to make it sound like the 60s was nothing but the hardcore civil rights scenario, because you wound up with, I don't know, like Broadway, you had Hello, Dolly, you had Man of La Mancha, you had Cabaret, which is actually another one that pushed the envelope. Again, in terms of what Broadway had as acceptable. Now, here was a story that really, from a visual standpoint, as well as a story standpoint, did poke the bear a bit. And then you had movies like Swiss Family Robinson and The Apartment and Ocean's 11. There was entertainment going on for sure, just pure, exciting entertainment. But there was also a lot of stories being told that had not had that platform before. And then, of course, we move into the 70s and 80s. And I know, Chris, I'm going to go quicker so that we can get out of my time machine. But again, in the 70s, you had the movie MASH, which, again, was looking back at the Korean War and talking about being in the military. But it was not John Wayne's view of the military. It wasn't us being in the right absolutely and the enemy being absolutely in the wrong. It asked a lot of questions about the sensibilities or the nonsense of war and what it does to people and stuff, at the same time throwing some humor in there. Yeah, I like to think, like in The Heat of the Night and some of the other films, I like to think that suddenly people felt they had a right to express themselves and to really tell stories that, again, had been suppressed or ignored or people weren't even aware of. And now suddenly here was this wonderful opportunity for it in comics and film and the stage and novels. And then as we move forward, I think people began to feel even more empowered to do that in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Literally what we can look at, if we look back 30 years, we can see that society does influence us to a certain degree. And we also have an impact on society. I think now we're in a time period where we have to question, where are we going from here? And really, what does it mean? And I, for one, wonder in particular in terms of the kind of material that's being turned out, I sometimes wonder if there aren't more harsh and edgy and hard-hitting stories with doom and gloom than they are any of the other types of stories that can be told. And I wonder, is that a reflection of what we're really dealing with? Or is that the media or some larger group going, let's keep pushing that stuff because it sells, like bad news sells?
If we're talking about the last 20 years, history has so sped up in the last 100, 150 years, faster than almost all the evolution and the development of things, technology and whatever, faster than the rest of history combined. So too social issues, so too delivery systems. In the last 20 years, maybe 30 years by now, whether it's Spike Lee or Slacker or some of those independent films that taught audiences, what? I don't have to go through the huge studio system or the gatekeepers to tell my story. The cameras and simple lighting rigs were now affordable, and we could go out and make our own movies. And even if we just got it into festivals, we could express ourselves in this way. And now you can make a film on one of these things, the phone you have in your pocket, and it could be of a quality unheard of. When we were talking about the movies that we mentioned before, that changes the game in a way. You've seen something and you can't unsee it. You opened a gate and you're not going to be able to close that back down. There are ways that people are trying, but it's amazing how artists of this generation, these last, I'd say, two generations, have found new ways to express themselves and have found new ways to talk about the things that drive them to the keyboard or to the pad or to the camera. We all talked about the same things. Eventually, you're going to talk about the Uber classic, but we're still using that same kind of structure. And now it might be about being trans or wanting to be a hockey player and you're African American or Canadian, Black Canadian or something like that. You break that down and it can be there. Whether they're telling stories shorter, like in a TikTok size thing, or self-publishing, or putting out web comics, or a blog that tells stories, there are so many gates that have been just knocked down that it, I think, will have a lasting impact on what stories are told, how stories are told. And they say people read less than they ever did. Those who read more than the generations before them, and those who are more visual, they have much more to consume and many more choices of where to get stories and where to express or to complete the circle. The artist puts out the expression and you take it in and then react to it. For good and ill, there's great experiences with the creativity of today. And there's also a Frankenstein monster in the ability for people to just scream and shout and diss and try and tear down what they perceive or what they fear. It's not lost on me that the first Marvel film to star three women and be made mostly by women has been destroyed and has come in as the lowest box office, constantly barraged. But if you watch it, it's as fun as the last six, seven, eight, nine things that they've put out. There's only one difference. There's a definite lack of penises. And that seems to be a problem with some people.
And again, it's funny too, because as somebody that you and I know did a wonderful, I would call it, TikTok review and bestowing blessings on that particular film. Now that it's on, it's streaming. He even says this, now that it's streaming and all that nonsense and that noise at the box office is gone, people are starting to realize, oh, this isn't such a bad movie. No, it never was.
Fun movie, yeah.
It's the same film. It's right there. But again, it's who's leading the charge? Who's deciding what can be said and should be said and will be said? And I think it's great. It's fantastic. I don't even understand to some degree. And again, looking at this, I was born during the time where testosterone ruled. And yes, there were more penises behind and in front of the camera than anywhere else. But I don't find a problem with women producing the film, directing the film, starring in the film, being the massive part of the film, as long as it's a good film. Yeah. I don't see the problem. And I think that when I talk to my students, which are a marvelous array of people from different backgrounds and different countries and different ages and different life choices and all of that, one of the things that we strive for in my classes, and I'm sure in many of the others that I respect, is what's your voice? What are you trying to say? What do you want? How do you want to tell your story? Going back to, and I'll bring this something from the end of the show forward. One of the oldest stories in recorded history, as I understand it, is the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was written, if you will, prior to 600 BC. Hmm. And it's a hero's quest story. It's the king, Gilgamesh, going on this journey, this huge journey, this epic journey, because he and a friend of his had done something that angered the gods, and his friend dies. And so Gilgamesh goes off.
Enkidu died, yes.
Yes, Enkidu dies. And so Gilgamesh goes off to seek immortality, to find the sort of a life spring of immortality. Okay, that's a quest. That's a hero's quest. How many times have you seen a story, read a story with that theme, where the hero or heroine starts here and has to go through this to get there by the end of it? And that's everything from Jason and the Argonauts, something I loved when I was 11 years old, to Saving Private Ryan, to Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
And a million other stories in between. And whether it's male or females doing that is inconsequential. It's the quality of the story.
Except on social media.
You know what social media can do, you know, sometimes.
The point I'm making with that is that is a gatekeeper that has a new gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that different than the old gatekeepers who would say, oh, African-American screenwriter. Oh, yes. Huh? Take a good look at this. We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
You
or
know?
We have no blacks in this show, so there's nothing for you to do. You can't write.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are no blacks.
We might have a maid. And look now. Look at the differences now. Is it perfect? No. I think we can only benefit from a wider range of artists expressing themselves and telling stories. I'm ashamed to say I can't remember the name of the film. But I ran across a film with two characters in it. One was the brother, Chris Pine's brother in Hell or High Water. He's a really great indie type actor. Mm-hmm. And another was a very young girl. The character, she's like maybe 15, 16, somewhere. But the father and daughter. And the father had this kind of emotional or mental illness where he didn't trust anybody. And they kept going further and further away from society until they were up in the Pacific Northwest and they found a community, tiniest community you can imagine, in the woods. And that was too much for
him. Hmm.
And she had fallen in love with that community. So drama ensues there. But that story would never be told 30, 40 years ago. It was too small. And there are so many others that are being told now. I'll go from that little sublime little movie to what should have been absurd. Godzilla Minus One. It's a fantastic social story about PTSD. And about the effects of World War II on the Japanese. We are not, America's not seen or portrayed as the conquering heroes there. They look a lot like Godzilla, or we look a lot like Godzilla. That story would never have been told, or never have gotten to American audiences 40 years ago.
You mentioned that the original Godzilla film was totally a Japanese production and cast. And when they wanted to bring it to the United States, they had to shoot additional footage.
With Raymond Burr.
I respect. Yeah, Raymond Burr. And plug it in.
Right.
So that it would be palpable for the American audience. But it still comes down to, again, like you were saying, it comes down to what kind of stories can be told now and what kind of stories do you guys want to tell now?
Yeah.
What do you want to say now? And what my concerns, and again, my concerns are, again, the negatives, the constant flood of negatives, the constant barraging of negatives, of the apocalyptic scenario, as if hope is an antiquated word and there's no room for it anymore. Reality is it's all doom and gloom. We're all going to suck sewage pretty damn soon. And that's not been as when I was even preparing for this episode, even during our most difficult times in the 40s and the 60s and the 90s, there's always been some material that had hope, that had humor, that had uplifting message. And I really don't want to see that change now. Because I think, if anything...
Alex, I have hope for you.
Excuse me?
I have a message of hope for you.
Oh, good. Because I was going to say, if there's anything that we need more than anything at this time, it's hope. It's hope, and it's a clear series of voices that say, sanity be damned, we need to move in a more positive direction. But again, that's me speaking.
Give me 60 seconds.
Go for it. You have 62.
So Thursday... Glorious and I went on a date.
Yeah, you got to watch that, man. You two have been married for a really long time. This dating thing, I don't know.
We went on a date.
Yeah.
We went on one of them senior citizen dates where we go to the movies in the middle of the afternoon.
You can take a nap in the evening. Yeah, okay.
So we saw Bob Marley, One Love. And here's what's so amazing about that. Good chunk of it is set in the Jamaican Civil War.
Mm.
Hope, every time he strums a note, sings a line. And it's a Jamaican film. Everyone speaks with thick Jamaican accents. And whoever doesn't feel conversant in thick Jamaican accents, strap in, because it's worth the effort. Listen twice to the one sentence. And what you get out of that is two characters that are great metaphors for the creative process. Bob is a creator. He says, they refer to him at one point as the messenger. And then later on, his wife says the messenger has become the message. Mm. The very fact of his life and his creativity was the message. He was proving by his influence in Jamaica, by his influence, growing influence globally. And this film only is set in 77 and 78. So it's not his whole life. And it's told very artistically, a lot of visual metaphors and all that sort of stuff. But even with all that, you cannot help but love the idea of a pure artist doing what is true to his heart. And then right behind him, making sure he doesn't fall into the abyss, taking all his faults, because they don't put Bob on a pedestal, is Rita. And Rita is an amazing hero for our times.
Is Rita
his wife? Yeah. And the amount that she does to make it possible for him to do what he does.
Mm.
And the sacrifices she makes. Not that women should make the sacrifices and all that, but this is their relationship. And this is how their story went down. Right? And this is 2024. And I'm sitting there in a very diverse audience. Everybody is hanging on every second in this movie, and the film ends and applause breaks out. Everybody walks out feeling a little better in this insane time. Then we went home and turned on the news. We're like, oh God, here it is again.
Yeah.
But there's still those possibilities. The Marvels, love it or hate it, pretty positive. There are books out. We've talked about a bunch of books. My man Dennis Liane's latest novel is about nobody is pure in that book. Nobody. Everybody is corrupt or racist. And the hope of that is that they find, not everybody, one or two find a way to evolve a little bit. One or two finds what's really important. And from a metaphoric standpoint, that story is about the everyday person like you and me getting a glimpse of what's behind the curtains of power.
Mm.
And then saying, F no. And finding a way to do something about it. That story is the story is old as time.
Mm-hmm.
It's older. This will impress everybody. It's older than Alex Sims, that story. And it needs to be told now more than ever, and that it's still being told and told well.
And again, going back to the purpose of this story, this episode, which again is also preparation for next week, because again, next week we're going to have at least 6-7 authors here who are going to be able to talk about their journeys from their different standpoints and the kind of material that they turn out. And again, also answering questions that many of you will submit. But the reality is we all filter our creativity through our life experience, through the things that influence us, through the people in our lives. All that is definitely impactful on what we create. But we need to remind ourselves that if we're going to create, if we're going to be putting out, telling our stories, telling our damn stories, that we need to check in, whose voice are we using? Is it our voice? Is it our message? Is this really what we're talking about? And again, speaking in only for myself here, I can use a lot more stories that have something to do with the beauty of the human spirit, the charity of the human spirit, the strength of the human spirit. I'm not even talking politically at this point, because there have been good and bad on all sides of everything. But to paint everything negatively is a slippery slope. And so I would hope that as we look at where we are and we look at the kind of things that are going on and we want to write about these things, that we don't necessarily only have to record or report the negative. If there's some way to look beyond that and see, okay, what can we learn from this? How can we build from this? Where didn't it go wrong? Who didn't get involved in this negative, terrible thing? What good things are happening over here that might even be a comfort? And I'll even say it to young people. Because the stuff that we adults have to deal with, we shouldn't be piling it on in full-blown avalanche on kids. That we should give them some hope for the future as well. Give them some sense of your lives matter and you have value and there's room for you to grow and become whatever you want to become and out there. Again, I don't have answers for all this, but I do feel that the questions need to be asked. What do you want to say? How do you want to say it? When do you want to say it? To whom do you want to speak? And give that some thought and see what you come up with. And I would certainly love to hear, now I'm going to speak for both of us, we would love to hear some of your reactions to today's episode. And certainly we would love you to be here next week to be a part of that event. But in the meantime, if you want to throw some comments on questions and things into the Tell the Damn Story comments box, we will make that possible too.
Yeah, I feel like we just set the table for this conversation.
Mm.
And I feel like this. And maybe it's going to come from the audience. I don't know. But I'd love to hear, oh, you know what? What should be a classic that came out today, but should be a classic 20 years from now? This, whatever it is. Well, what are the things that you think will stand the test of time, will be the thing that this was the statement for this decade, for this generation? And I think Oppenheimer was an important film. I would argue that Barbie as bright and silly as it seemed on the outer shell, I think it had a more humane and more hopeful and more powerful message. Oppenheimer ultimately was about jealousy and tearing at each other and unleashing Armageddon. We never really put the genie back in the bottle. That still exists, and that's still a concern.
I think it was also about ego.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Robert Downey Jr.'s performance and that historical character is worth the price of admission, definitely. But the Oppenheimer story itself is fascinating. However, the stronger metaphor and the more powerful statement, I think, was made by Barbie, because it was created by and with women, and men cooperated. That was a shock. Mattel cooperated and said, yeah, you can do all that stuff. And Will Ferrell was like, yes, I will run around like that person because I've met that person. And yeah, I want to make that statement with you. And then Ken was just that whole statement where he saw male power, it completely corrupted him. There were so many statements. There were so many statements in there. And most of it was feminist. And I don't have to cheer for them. They have their own power. But I was impressed and I was excited. And it filled me with a hope that, man, you're not going to not tell these stories again. It was the most successful movie of the year. No matter what spin people put on the Scorsese movie, that was the biggest artistic statement and the biggest box office of the year. And it was done by women. And even if the director was snubbed by the Oscars, that's still the sexism of the time. She's still, people who saw the movie know that she created magic. So it's amazing how it advanced the conversation and the what we can do, and showed that sexism is still there.
It's alive and kicking.
Okay, so it's stuck to a gold statue. But we can move past that. That's another hurdle we'll do down the road and all that sort of stuff. But yeah.
So you had said a moment ago, pardon me, you said a moment ago that you felt that we just opened up the table to the conversation. So again, I'll spin back around and say, folks, if you have some comments, questions, or whatever that you want to add to this conversation, please do. If you have any questions that you want to add or ask for next week's episode, please do. The comment box is there for you to utilize. Please do that. And join us on our Facebook page, Tell the Damn Story, pardon me, excuse me. And you can also leave your thoughts there. And that's also going to be where the Facebook Live 300 episode will be televised next week at 11 a.m. in the morning on Sunday, Eastern Standard Time. That's New York time.
When I have to Sunday, get a tuxedo.
Yeah, Sunday, February 25th. And you'll get to enjoy not only Chris and I, but at least six other people who prevent us from talking a lot more, because we got to give them some time. Yeah,
that's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's okay. We're going to try and invite more.
That's 300. It's the 300th episode. What the hell?
Yeah, show folks that we know folks. Okay. So anyway, Chris, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for taking this ride with me. And I held back. We could have spent more time in the time machine, but I listened to Chris. He's right. I held back. I got us back to the present as quickly as I could.
Well, because we can offer something from the time machine, but we also are looking to, I really would love to hear what people have to say about what the big statements are for the 20s, the 2020s. Because we are in the middle of earth-shaking history all around the world. And a lot of it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to birth artistic statement.
Yeah.
And can't wait to see what it is.
Possibly by you people.
Yeah, so, you people. What do you mean, you people?
That's just what I said. Those folks out there.
I said what I said.
Yeah, that's right. I ain't taking none of that back. Okay. So anyway, Chris, take care.
Peace, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Speaking of time machine, peace.